Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
It is an urgent matter that we need to speak to right now, because too many, especially of our seniors, of our patients with advanced diseases, are getting, and I'll use the word, they're getting tortured in our hospitals when they're having these procedures performed on them, when we know that many of these procedures have huge risks and very, very small, if any, benefit at the end of life when you have a serious illness and an advanced terminal condition.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety and home to the newest edition of Healthy Living and Healing Options through the use of our proprietary brand of therapeutic-grade essential oils. Thank you for joining me today. You just heard a snippet from today's guest, here to talk about something I recently experienced, and that is the end-of-life conversation with a loved one. My mom passed away in August, and toward the end of her hospital stay, it was quite apparent that she was dying. Yet, no one said that to me. Doctors were still rushing around, attempting to insert this, install that, drain over here, poke over there. To which both my mom and I said resoundingly, "No, no more." The closest a healthcare person came to letting me know that mom was dying was her cardiologist, who called me one morning, as he always did, with his early rounds update. I told him I was in the midst of making some homemade tomato sauce for the ravioli I was bringing to my mom to eat for dinner at the hospital. To which he replied, "Good, keep doing things like that for her." In that moment, I knew what he meant. Yet why couldn't he have had that candid conversation with me? Why couldn't he have said, "Good, because she most likely won't be around much longer to enjoy a home-cooked meal"? Why didn't anyone talk to us in terms of reality? Mom was dying, and she knew it, and was actually hoping that the process would hurry along. I knew it. I just didn't know the exact timing of it. Yet not one person caring for her at the hospital in a period of 10 days ever went there with us. Mom and I talked about it. We both knew what she wanted, but no one else asked. How can people die as they wish if no one asks them what they want? So today my guest is a physician in the Department of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, a patient rights activist, and an author. He has something to say about this conversation we all should be having, and that's coming up then a bit later in the show. So stay tuned for that. Well, now, last week I introduced my tinydropseo.com website, tinydropseo.com, and that is home for some non-invasive solutions to common health issues. And I introduced the fact that essential oils are currently being used in hospitals throughout the country to help with the stress of illness, to promote relaxation, both for the patients and the providers, and as an antimicrobial agent being used to fight infections. I also mentioned that the use of essential oils was also included over 500 times in the Bible. So essential oils are nothing new, nothing voodoo or weird, but rather mainstream and something each of us should own and include in our daily lives. And I must say the response was tremendous. We shipped over 250 bottles in just a matter of days. So I'm happy that you recognize the need for alternative and safer options when it comes to managing your health. So right now, I'd like to share some more useful ways to use essential oils to help with health issues that we all experience. There's a page on the tinydropseo.com website, and the EO stands for essential oils, tinydropseo.com. There's a page called Health Solutions, and that page lists many, many health issues and how essential oils can help. And on that page, I included a paragraph that states, "Most medications were initially derived from plants, and most of today's lab-created synthetic treatments attempt to duplicate what Mother Nature already does quite well." So if plants already offer the answer, why do big pharmaceutical companies spend billions of dollars to recreate the obvious? Well, the answer is obvious too. You cannot patent a plant. Therefore, There's no money to be made. So I say, let's outsmart Big Pharmacy and take care of ourselves by finding the plant-based solutions to help with your needs. Now, these suggestions are not to substitute for medical advice from your doctor. So don't discontinue your current treatment and always seek medical advice before adding a new approach. So let's begin with a problem we've all had at some point in our lives and will continue to have, and that is headaches. Essential oils serve as headache treatments because they can safely and effectively treat the headache trigger instead of simply minimizing the pain temporarily. Essential oils provide relief. Plus, when using essential oils for headaches, there's no nasty side effects such as liver, kidney, or stomach damage. Now, one of the best essential oils to use for headaches is peppermint oil. Peppermint oil has a long-lasting cooling effect on the skin. It has an ability to inhibit muscle contractions, and it stimulates blood flow in the forehead when applied topically, which means applied directly to your head. Applying peppermint oil across the forehead and on the temples can alleviate a tension headache. In fact, in a 1996 study, 41 patients and 164 headache attacks were analyzed in a placebo-controlled double-blind crossover study. The peppermint oil was applied topically 15 and 30 minutes after a headache began. And participants reported pain relief in their headache diaries, and peppermint oil proved to be well-tolerated and a cost-effective alternative to usual headache therapies. There were also no adverse side effects reported after the peppermint treatment. So in order to improve blood circulation, reduce pain, and relieve tension, simply combine 2 to 3 drops of peppermint oil with almond oil and rub it into the shoulders, forehead, back, and neck. And we offer the sweet almond oil on the tinydropseo.com website as well. Another excellent oil for headaches is lavender oil. Lavender essential oil induces relaxation and relieves tension and stress, working as a sedative, an antidepressant, anti-anxiety, and a calming agent. There's also growing evidence that lavender oil serves as an effective treatment of neurological conditions and disorders. How does it work? Well, the topical use of lavender oil affects the limbic system because the main constituents of lavender oil is linalool and linalool acetate, and they're both rapidly absorbed through the skin and are thought to cause central nervous system depression. So for this reason, lavender oil can be used to treat headaches caused by anxiety disorders and related conditions. Well, that's good to know. Lavender oil benefits include relieving feelings of restlessness and disturbed sleep, 2 symptoms of headaches. It also regulates serotonin levels, which helps minimize pain in the nervous system that could lead to migraine attacks. A 2012 study published in European Neurology found that lavender essential oil is effective in the management of migraine headaches. 47 participants were investigated in this placebo-controlled clinical trial. The treatment group inhaled lavender oil for 15 minutes during a migraine headache. The patients were then asked to record their headache severity and associated symptoms in 30-minute intervals for 2 hours. The difference between the control and the treatment groups was statistically significant. From the 129 headache cases in the treatment group, 92 responded entirely or partially to lavender oil inhalation. And if you care, all of this is documented and the studies are made available at the website tinydropseo.com if you want to read more. According to a study published in the European Journal of Neurology, people struggling with migraine headaches saw a significant reduction in pain when they inhaled lavender oil for 15 minutes. Now, probably the most effective natural treatment for headaches is combining lavender oil with peppermint oil and rubbing these oils on the back of the neck, the temples, and on the side of the forehead, along with inhaling it. Typically, 2 drops of each oil in the palm of your hand, then rubbed into the area, works perfectly. You can also apply lavender oil directly to the back of your neck, temples, and wrists to relieve stress or tension headaches. And to relax your body and mind, add 5 to 10 drops of lavender oil to a warm water bath and take deep breaths so the sedative properties can begin to take effect and reduce your headache tension. Eucalyptus oil is another option for headaches. Again, a clinical trial published in Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine states that inhaling eucalyptus oil can decrease a person's pain and blood pressure. This study involved 52 patients who recently underwent total knee replacement surgery. Eucalyptus oil treatment promoted emotional stability in the patients, reduced edema formulation, that means water formation, and had anti-inflammatory effects. These pain-reducing and relaxing effects can be beneficial to people suffering from tension headaches, too. And finally, there's lemongrass oil. The calming and soothing effects of lemongrass oil has the power to relieve the pain, pressure, and tension that headaches can cause. Try massaging diluted lemongrass oil on your temples and breathing in the relaxing lemony fragrance. So, there you have it, 4 essential oils that can work for headaches. Here's a couple of how-to-use tips. For migraine headaches, massage lavender or peppermint oil into the temples and back of the neck to relieve migraine headaches and ease feelings of nausea and anxiety. For tension headaches, use eucalyptus or peppermint oil topically on the temples, forehead, and wrists to alleviate stress and reduce tension. Add 5 to 10 drops of lavender oil to a warm water bath. For sinus headaches, use eucalyptus oil topically on the chest, top of your nose, and temples to open up the nasal passages and relieve sinus tension. So there you have it, some easy breezy ways to combat a headache without the dangerous stomach bleeding associated with aspirin. I use peppermint and lavender all of the time whenever I feel a headache coming on. I keep the bottles by my bed because sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night with a headache, and for sure, I'm not going to take an aspirin on an empty stomach, so a few tiny drops of peppermint, lavender, or both does the trick. Okay, let's talk about everyone's favorite and most common problem, and that is anti-aging. And even though it's not a health problem, people spend billions of dollars on chemical and synthetic creams and lotions and potions to try to look younger, when maybe we should look to nature. And there's nothing better than one of my favorite essential oils, and that is frankincense. People wonder, what is frankincense? Frankincense is a tree, and the bark is collected to make essential oil. The oil starts as a resin that seeps out of injured bark. Now, this tree can grow to be around 20 feet tall with shiny wax-looking leaves and white flowers. Frankincense trees are most commonly found in Somalia, China, Ethiopia, and southern Arabia. In fact, the Chinese would use the resin paste to treat tuberculosis and leprosy. They also used the incense to fumigate rooms where the sick people once resided. Frankincense essential oil has a rich, woody, earthy scent with a deeply mysterious nuance. And personally, I love it. And I use it nightly on my face. Why? Because frankincense essential oil is a powerful astringent, meaning it helps protect skin cells. It can be used to help reduce acne blemishes and the appearance of large pores and wrinkles. The oil can be used anywhere the skin becomes saggy, such as the abdomen, jowls, or under the eyes. Simply mix 6 drops of oil to 1 ounce of an unscented oil like sweet almond or coconut oil and apply it directly to the skin. But be sure to do a small patch area first to test for possible allergic reactions. Now, frankincense can actually reduce the appearance of sunspots and age spots. If you have uneven color on your skin, some whiteness in some areas, any spottiness or splotchiness, frankincense oil is the number one ingredient that can help even out skin tone and help get rid of sunspots and age spots. Studies have shown that it helps tone and lift your skin, reduces appearance of scars and acne, and heals wounds. It can also be beneficial for fading of stretch marks, surgery scars, or marks associated with pregnancy, and for healing dry or cracked skin. That's crazy that one oil can do all that. Frankincense, it's my favorite. Another oil that is excellent for your skin is lavender oil. Lavender essential oil helps heal skin conditions, burns, and cuts, but also because it specifically targets your skin, it improves cellular communication within your skin. Lavender essential oil mixed with coconut oil has profound benefits on your skin. Just 10 drops per 1 ounce of coconut oil will soothe the worst sunburn and bring rapid healing to dry skin, minor cuts, and scrapes. Again, want to reduce age spots? Try mixing lavender oil with frankincense oil and put it on your skin first thing in the morning, right after you shower, and right before bed. So there you have it. 2 simple ways to knock out a headache and improve your looks without spending a fortune and without ruining your health in the process. A bottle of peppermint, lavender, eucalyptus, and frankincense oil, and you're good to go. In fact, I've packaged all 8 of my blockbuster essential oils into one package and discounted the price just for you. Visit the tinydropseo.com website. Go to the shop page and you can purchase the variety pack of 8 for only $55. That is a crazy price. So I hope you can take advantage. Or you can purchase the bottles singly for $7.99. I hope you can join me and take charge of your health, looking to nature instead of big pharmacy to help you feel better and look better. Visit tinydropseo.com or you can order by phone. Just call and leave me a message on the studio line 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And share with your friends. Send them to tinydropseo.com. That's www.tinydropseo.com. Tiny drops, big results. From me to you.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Fragrance-free is the way to be. Is your health being destroyed by other people's toxic fragrances? Have you ever given any thought to secondhand fragrance contamination? Well, the use of perfume, cologne, air fresheners, and scented laundry products has become so commonplace that the indoor air quality of public places is more toxic than it was when people could freely smoke tobacco wherever and whenever they wished. The term secondhand fragrance is used to describe the combination of smells that are released into the public airspace from the scented products that people use on their skin, hair, and clothing. It also includes products that intentionally add fragrance to the air, such as air fresheners, car fresheners, and scented candles. The fragrances are called secondhand because the decision of one person to use fragrances pollutes the air for everyone. People who don't use fragrances or who can't tolerate them are often then forced to breathe the contaminated air that everyone shares. And this reminds me of the time Bob and I and another couple were eating out at a fondue restaurant in North Carolina. The tables were tight and close together. We were happily dipping our goodies into the different cheeses when the host seated another couple right next to us. This woman screamed of fragrance as she entered the room. The smell grabbed your nose and nearly twisted it off. Before she even sat down, our eyes were watering as a defensive reaction to the pollution. She sat down and we continued to eat. Bob dropped his fork and summoned the waitress. "Can we please move to a different table?" he asked. The waitress looked dumbfounded and so did our guests. I was quite shocked as well that Bob would make such a bold move. He said, "We can't eat with that smell. Everything is beginning to taste like perfume." So with that, the four of us got up, grabbing our silverware, glasses, and napkins, and moved across the restaurant. Now at that time, I just thought it was the smell factor. But now I know. Perfume, cologne, and products that indicate that they contain fragrance are made from a combination of manufactured chemical compounds. Solvents and other chemicals are added to the mixture in an attempt to make the fragrance behave as if it was an essential oil derived directly from a plant. The fragrances in these products are chemical concoctions that are toxic to all people. Almost all perfume and cologne sold today is derived from petroleum and coal tar. They're not made from flowers and sweet-smelling plants, as advertising might suggest. Even very expensive perfumes may be made from 95% synthetic ingredients. So it's just a myth that it's only a smell and it won't hurt you. Any molecular substance that becomes airborne can enter the nasal passages, your nose, and come in contact with receptor sites used for perceiving smell. Some substances bypass the blood-brain barrier and enter the brain. This means that there is a constant flow of substances entering your brain, whether or not your brain can identify the name of the substance or not. And as soon as you smell perfume, air fresheners, scented candles, laundry detergent, or dryer sheets, you've already absorbed them into your body. And this leads me to the use of cell phones, which is known to create tiny holes in the blood-brain barrier, thus allowing more of these toxic chemicals into your brain. Now, the average fragrance product tested contained 14 secret chemicals not listed on the label. Among them are chemicals associated with hormone disruption and allergic reaction. And many have not been assessed for safety in personal care products. And this includes sunscreens. Fragrance secrecy is legal due to a giant loophole in the Federal Fair Packaging and Labeling Act of 1973, claiming that to disclose would be leaking trade secrets. And to make matters worse, the FDA lacks the authority to require manufacturers to test cosmetics for safety, including fragrance products, before they're sold to consumers. As a result, you may be using a perfume, a cologne, a body spray, or other scented cosmetics like lotion and aftershave, and exposing yourself to chemicals that may increase your risk for certain health problems. A quarter-ounce bottle of perfume that sells for $150 is a combination of alcohol and chemically transformed petroleum. And sometimes it might contain a tiny percentage of essential oil. While translating this into the lives of people, we see that approximately 95 million adults and children in America experience health problems caused by the chemicals that other people put on their skin, their hair, and on their clothing. These chemicals, which include fragrances, cause a variety of negative reactions, including exhaustion, weakness, hay fever symptoms, dizziness, difficulty concentrating, confusion, headaches, rashes, muscle aches, heart palpitations, nausea, stomach cramps, and on and on and on. Babies and children are even more vulnerable to these negative health reactions than are adults. The elderly and people trying to recover from cancer and other serious illnesses are particularly at risk when exposed. But despite this, 85% of women still wear perfume, although that number may be falling. Additionally, over 60% of men use cologne and aftershave. And finally, think about it. Most public restrooms have some type of air freshener, and almost all have scented hand soap. All of this secondhand chemical pollution makes life very difficult for the millions of Americans who become ill when exposed to fragrances. The greatest challenge to cleaning up public air is perfume addiction. Daily users of perfume, cologne, and highly scented laundry products are commonly addicted to the chemicals in these products. This is true for all segments of society, including public health professionals and medical care professionals. The offices of most doctors continue to be saturated with synthetic fragrances from cleaning products, air fresheners, and perfume worn by the staff, even though there is a growing documentation that this presents a problem for some patients. So I'm asking, if you're a healthcare provider, a doctor, a nurse, an aide, a transporter, whatever, please keep this in mind. Don't wear perfumes to work and suggest to the powers that be at your hospital or healthcare facility that you adopt a fragrance-free workplace. Air contamination caused by perfume and cologne and other scented products should not be just another barrier to healing while in the hospital or doctor's office. I mean, whatever happened to the idea of healthcare without harm? How can a sick body heal while bombarded with chemicals, and not to mention microwave radiation given off by wireless technology that abounds in every hospital these days? Well, that's like a 1-2 punch. So here's today's call to action. Whether you feel it or not, why subject your wallet and your body to such high-priced chemicals that do nothing but erode your wealth and your health? I say, become fragrance-free. It's the way to be. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, always inviting a guest to join us who knows how to make a positive difference when it comes to patient safety and the patient experience. And perhaps the most important patient experience will include some of our final conversations with our healthcare providers. What will our doctor-patient end-of-life discussion sound like, feel like? A key ingredient to informed patient-doctor discussions regarding end-of-life care includes the patient's ability to understand and imagine hypothetical disease states and medical interventions. However, studies suggest that there are numerous barriers to communication between doctors and patients. But one innovation to surmount these barriers includes using video decision aids to reinforce end-of-life conversations. And with that, our guest today is going to share a low-tech, high empathy plan to revolutionize end-of-life care. He is Dr. Angelo Volandis, and he leads a group of internationally recognized researchers who create and study video decision aids to empower patients and families to make informed decisions at the end of life. Angelo is a faculty member in the General Medicine Unit at the Massachusetts General Hospital and Assistant Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. His first book was just released and titled The Conversation, A Revolutionary Plan for End-of-Life Care, about how people can empower themselves to get the right medical care at the right time and on their own terms. And we're going to dig into the revolutionary plan right now. So welcome to the show, Angelo.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me. Really great to be here.
Oh, thank you. It is our pleasure. And one of the main reasons I was interested to have you on the program is that your mission statement is in alignment with my message and the goal of this program. And I'd like to share that with our listeners. Your mission is to empower patients and families so that they can be in the center of and in control of their healthcare. You say that we firmly believe that the best patient-doctor relationships are based on open communication and shared knowledge, and that medical care must reflect patients' values and preferences. How then did you come to use videos to support this kind of shared decision-making?
When it comes to the end of life, most patients tell us they don't want to die in hospitals, and yet the fact is that most patients are still dying in hospitals. And I think a large reason for that is that most doctors have a really tough time about having the conversation, this honest and frank discussion that we ought to be having with our patients and with our families. And so in order to empower patients, you know, if your doctor's not going to bring this up, well, can you get a video that presents some of the information so that you know your options? And, you know, as part of the book, we have released a free video which is at theconversationbook.org, and it's a short video that really walks you through the process of what are the questions you should ask yourself, what are your options for medical care, what's an advanced directive, and how do you pick someone to speak on your behalf if you're not able to have that conversation. And so what we've done is created these short videos to help empower patients and families to know their options. And what we know is that when patients get care, quote-unquote care, at the end of life, much of those aggressive medical interventions are things that most patients would not want if they were more informed. And so what we're hoping is that the videos truly put patients back at the center of care. Our healthcare system is not patient-centered. We hope that the videos put patients back at the center so that they truly get the care that they want, and more importantly, that they deserve.
And I thought about your video yesterday. This is all coming together quite interestingly. I have a very close family friend who is actively dying, and his wife called me up and said he's in the hospital. So we went to visit with him yesterday. And while visiting him, they moved him to the palliative care wing, and the new nurse walked in and asked his wife, and right in front of him, she said, "Does he know how bad off he is?" And then she took off his boots for the pressure sores and threw them up on the top of the cabinet and said, "He's not going to be needing these anymore." And it made me think of your videos. And I thought, wow, if there was a hospital protocol that addressed this conversation prior to that family even arriving at the palliative care floor, then everybody would know, the patient, the family, and the staff would know that everyone knew what this gentleman was aware of, and wouldn't have to phrase that question in such a harsh way.
Yeah, I'm sorry that your family friend had such a bad experience. Well, the truth is that, you know, doctors and nurses, we're not trained to do this conversation well. We're really not. Mm-hmm. You know, especially people who have been out of school for the last 10 years, they have never heard about palliative care or hospice. They probably never had communication training. So to be quite honest, I'm not surprised that you had that really awful interaction, especially during this vulnerable period in people's lives and at the end of life. And so if we had videos to help educate people, patients, families, people years before they get a critical illness, well, we'd all be better for it. And that's why we feel that videos will disrupt the healthcare system by empowering patients. Because right now, let's face it, doctors are still in control. We have all the knowledge. If we don't bring this up during a patient-doctor visit, guess what? You're unlikely to talk about this. Mm-hmm. But if a patient knows what his or her options are, or if a family, if a daughter knows what her options are for her mom with advanced Alzheimer's disease, well, then they can take control and start the conversation with their doctor so that even if your doctor doesn't want to talk about this or doesn't feel comfortable talking about end-of-life care, well, you can start the process, putting the power back into patients and families' hands where it ought to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that makes me think about unwanted care. And I want to talk about that for a moment, because you did mention at the opening that most people prefer to die in the comfort of their homes. I think the statistic is what, like 2/3 of Americans die in healthcare institutions, and they've got all kinds of life support going on and using all of the drugs that are available. And healthcare providers want to treat, and patients and families think that they must be treated. How do we know when it's too much? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's such a complicated question, but such an important and urgent issue for us to talk about. You're absolutely right. Even though in the latest poll, 86% of Americans want to die at home surrounded by their loved ones, 2/3 of Americans, the fact is 2/3 of seniors are dying in a hospital or a nursing home. That is truly unwanted care. Mm-hmm. When people end up getting CPR, getting coded, getting put on breathing machines in a hospital at the end of life, when we know they wouldn't have wanted it, especially if they have advanced cancer or advanced Alzheimer's disease, well, then that's a medical error. It's no different than a surgeon operating on the wrong side of the body. It is an urgent matter that we need to speak to right now, because too many, especially of our seniors, of our patients with advanced diseases, are getting, and I'll use the word, they're getting tortured in our hospitals mm-hmm. when they're having these procedures performed on them, when we know that many of these procedures have huge risks and very, very small, if any, benefits at the end of life when you have a serious illness and an advanced terminal condition. And look, the main reason why I think this is happening is that doctors are not having the conversation. Mm-hmm. We're not slowing down, sitting down, and asking patients what's important to them. And that's the main reason why I called my book The Conversation. It's a pretty simple title. It is making sure that we are honest and having these discussions with our patients, not when it's 3 a.m. and you're vomiting and in the emergency room and you can't speak and you have an advanced illness, but we should be having this discussion years before, when you're feeling great, when you just ran the Boston Marathon. You should be having these discussions when you can have a discussion with a doctor. And you have the opportunity to think about what's important to you and what your values are.
Right, right.
But I think due to the brute force of our training and the hours and the exhaustion, we forget, we lose sight. We even lose our navigation when it comes to remembering what's important, and that is making sure we are honoring and respecting the voices of patients.
Right.
But we've designed a healthcare system that often leads us not to do the right thing by assuming that everybody walking into the hospital wants everything done. I think we've designed a system that has failed people, especially at the end of life. And what's very interesting is that the IOM, the Institute of Medicine, came out with a report just a few months ago that stated end-of-life care in America is broken at every level mm-hmm. and it needs to be entirely overhauled.
Right. And that takes us then directly to that conversation. And so as I was thinking about the conversation, that's broken down into two scenarios. One would be the patient and their family prior to a medical event, as you suggested. And the second would be the conversation at the institution level. So can you address both of those one at a time? The patient and the family, let's start with that. When and how and how do you suggest that take place?
Absolutely. So I think when it comes to patients and families, this conversation about care at the end of life should happen outside of the healthcare system first. It should happen over dinner. It should happen at a holiday, perhaps over Thanksgiving, where everybody's together. And let's just talk about what's important to us. What's a good day? What brings us joy and happiness? And then let's talk about if you weren't able to do those activities, if you weren't able to go for a walk or to interact with your grandchildren, well, what are the sort of things you would or wouldn't want attempted in terms of healthcare? You know, these aren't really medical questions. They're really questions about life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell my patients and families, go ahead and start this conversation before you become ill, before any of this medical stuff happens. And then pick someone that you feel really represents who you are. Maybe it's a son, maybe it's a daughter, but maybe it's your neighbor who knows you far better than a family member. And then have this conversation with them as well. And what I tell people is when you start this process, when you pick what we're calling a proxy or a surrogate to speak on your behalf, you know, go ahead and record yourself having this conversation with them. And I tell people, go ahead and email that short video to yourself, to your loved ones, but also to your doctor. Mm-hmm. And someday that video might be able to be uploaded into your electronic medical record. And this way, when you do become ill and you do get admitted to a hospital, that hospital physician who's probably never seen you before can actually go through your electronic health record and see that you left a video. And that doctor can look at that video and hear your voice, see your face, understand what was important to you, and make sure that he or she is honoring and respecting your wishes. That's what I think people can do to take back healthcare, to start the process of having this conversation with their loved ones, with their surrogate, their proxy, years before they ever end up in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And then go ahead and start this conversation with your doctor. At the end of the day, it is critical that you have this discussion with your doctor, because your doctor is the only one who can translate what's important to you into what the healthcare system, the medical orders that the healthcare system needs in order to respect and honor your voice. But to go to your second point about how do we get this conversation going within medical facilities and within the medical culture, well, I think that's where we really need to think about even larger questions about what our society pays for in terms of having these discussions. Look, you know, the way medicine works today is reimbursement. We pay for doctors to do things. We pay for them to do all these procedures. In fact, we pay for hospital beds to be full, not empty. I think we have to move from what we call these volume-based ways of reimbursing to value. I think we should pay people to deliver care that they deserve and that is consistent with their wishes. So I think there needs to be a lot of reform at both a policy level but also at a hospital level so that doctors understand that this conversation is just as important as performing CPR or doing a colonoscopy. Talking to your patient is just as vital to their health as doing all these individual procedures. So I think there's multiple things that we can do to change medical culture. And, you know, I'm happy to say that the videos are playing a large part of that. We see throughout the country where these videos are implemented that it's starting to change the medical culture. And again, I hope people do take advantage of the free videos that we have online at theconversationbook.org so that they can start empowering themselves and getting the care that they deserve.
Excellent, excellent advice. I like the idea of videotaping your conversation with your family members, because that would probably also even affirm your competency that you were a lucid, clear thinking person when you made those decisions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about advanced care planning and the specifics of that, making those decisions ahead of time and communicating those wishes to our loved ones and our healthcare providers. Are there any certain steps that a person should go through to accomplish this?
Absolutely. So the first step is to recognize that you need to have this conversation early and often. And let's be clear, this isn't a one-off. It's not a one-time conversation, but a conversation that you have over time. And so I tell people the four questions that they should ask are the ones that I referred to earlier. First, what's a good day for you? What brings you joy and happiness? Second, if you weren't able to do those things, what sort of things do you or don't you want healthcare providers to attempt? The third thing is, what are your hopes and fears in terms of medical care? And the last two things are, one, how do your spiritual, religious, and cultural beliefs affect your decision-making, and then who would you want to talk on your behalf, to speak on your behalf, if you're not able to speak for yourself? I think that's one of the key questions that people forget. Don't just pick someone, but actually start that discussion with them. So if it's a daughter who lives nearby you, great. Pick her, make sure you get the legal documents that state that, and make sure to have the conversation. But, you know, for a lot of people whose kids are not nearby them, I tell them, pick someone that really knows you. You know, if you haven't seen your daughter, she lives in California, and you live in Boston, let's say, where I live, and that your daughter hasn't seen you for some time, you know, that might not be the right person to make these decisions. It might be your neighbor. It might be someone down the street who has known you for years. So it's important that you pick someone who will be there when you need them most, and it's important that you start that conversation with them ahead of time.
Now, I want to step back. We were talking about end-of-life care, and you talked on some of your videos about the three levels of care. Can we just review those for our listeners?
Oh, that's a great, great point. I think it's important that everybody understand that when you walk into the hospital anywhere in America, there are basically three levels of care, and they are called life-prolonging care, limited care, and comfort care. And these three categories are true throughout the state. So the first one is called life-prolonging care. This category of care is, the focus is to prolong life. It includes anything available in a modern-day hospital, things like CPR or cardiopulmonary resuscitation, breathing machines, interventions in the intensive care unit. The goal of this category is to prolong life regardless of the pain and suffering or the risks and benefits. This category is really the category that most people walking into the hospital, we just assume that's what you would pick. And for the most part, for healthy people or people with a treatable illness, it makes a lot of sense to pick a life-prolonging care. But for people with a serious advanced illness, here's where the details become important. And here it has to do a lot with CPR, for instance, the success rate of some of the procedures in life-prolonging care. CPR is a wonderful procedure that saved countless lives, and it has improved dramatically over time. But for a healthy person, CPR has a very good chance of helping your heart start beating again. But it's important to know that for patients with a serious illness, advanced dementia, advanced cancer, advanced kidney disease, CPR often does not work. So what I tell people is, if you're going to choose life-prolonging care, make sure you understand what the risks and benefits are of these procedures for someone like you. So if you're healthy, then it makes good sense to pick life-prolonging care. But if you have an advanced terminal illness, it still might make good sense to pick life-prolonging care, but learn the facts. Learn what the risks and benefits, what the success rate is for a lot of the procedures included in life-prolonging care. So that's the first category of care. The middle category is called limited care. Here the goal is to preserve physical and mental functioning. It includes many of the things we offer in our hospitals today: intravenous medications, CAT scans, MRIs, a lot of the things that we offer outside of the intensive care unit in our hospitals. The goal is to perform things that often work but don't involve a lot of pain or suffering. And the middle category would not include things like CPR and breathing machines, because for people with an advanced illness, a lot of these interventions often do not work, and they come with a good deal of pain and suffering. So the middle category is really for people who want to focus on physical and mental functioning, who are willing to do procedures that offer a good chance of helping without the burden of pain and suffering. And then the third category of care is called comfort care. Here, the goal is to relieve pain and suffering. It's really the focus on each day, the quality of each day, not the quantity of days. So comfort care includes things like pain relief. It includes things such as hospice care. It really focuses on the patient and making sure they're not short of breath, they're not in any pain. It makes sure that the focus of the whole healthcare team is on you and what's important to you. It would not include CPR or a lot of the other interventions that I mentioned earlier, because we know that in patients with an advanced illness, many of these procedures do not help, and they do cause a good deal of pain and suffering. So comfort care is when we want to focus on being comfortable and where we're focused on really enjoying every day we have. So those are the three categories of care: life prolonging care, limited care, and comfort care. And those are the three options available across the country. And the online video that that goes along with the book explains each one. So if you want to review them, go ahead and check out the video.
Excellent. I think that's very important. I don't know that folks have a clear picture in their minds of where those levels of care lie. So now, listeners, whether they're patients or providers, we've got a great mix of both. If they want to find out more about you and contact you, how can they do so?
Sure. So for the videos, they can go and see the free video, which is at theconversationbook.org. If they want to contact me, they can just go to angelovolandis.com. And if they want to purchase the book, The Conversation, it's available in every bookstore in America, independent, Barnes & Noble's. It's also on Amazon and BarnesandNobles.com. It's also available as an audiobook on Audible.com, iTunes, and it's obviously also as a Kindle and an ebook. It's pretty much available in any format and everywhere as well.
Excellent, excellent. So I'm going to encourage everyone to do so. And I think that the conversation we had today reminds us that all healthcare decisions should be about the patient and not the illness. And your videos act as an icebreaker that open the door to sometimes a difficult dialogue, but do permit a more patient-centered conversation. So I encourage everyone to visit the website that we just mentioned, theconversationbook.org. If you're a patient, tell your physician and hospital about this. And so, Angelo, thank you so much for sharing yourself and your project with us today. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
After the show, be sure to visit the website speakupandstayalive.com for more life-saving information. Plus, that's where you can purchase the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. Bring the book to the hospital with you. It's the best way to stand out and in a positive way. And remember, we donate 2 handmade pillowcases to either a troop member or to a local veteran shelter for every book sold with your name on it as the donor. So for a mere $20, you benefit, and so does some well-deserving warrior. Give a meaningful and useful gift that really says, I care. Give the gift of healthcare safety. Purchase the book, the patient safety logs, and throw in some of those icebreaker cards. It's a one-size-fits-all present that everybody needs. You can order online at speakupandstayalive.com or call me, 440-725-5462. No matter what your age, life is about successful aging, and it's especially important as we get older. Addressing the needs of the whole person should be the focus of your entire healthcare process. Let's talk about that with my friends from the Welsh Home in Rocky River, Ohio, to see what they do to address this need. Welcome to the show, Sarah Cook.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sarah, you have a life enrichment program at the Welsh Home. What is that, and how does it benefit your residents?
Life enrichment at the Welsh Home is an opportunity or a definition almost of what we want to call the atmosphere that we're providing. We want to be talking about and focusing on and providing opportunities for people to engage physically, socially, intellectually, spiritually, and have a well-rounded experience and opportunity. And the reason people come to the Welsh Home is to get better, to go home a lot of times. We want to make sure that those opportunities to heal and be engaged socially, physically, intellectually, spiritually are all included. It's not just your physical nature.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you.
Holistic care is not a one-time action, but rather part of your life's journey. And the Welsh Home understands this. And you do not have to be Welsh to be a resident. Call them today to arrange for a tour or simply to ask questions. 440-331-0420. That's 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com. Well, there you have it. Another show with lots for you to think about. And if you'd like even more, invite me to speak to your group, your club, association, church, senior or women's group, or even your assisted living facility or hospital. Everyone can use a brush up on patient safety, because guess what? We're all going to spend some time in a hospital, either as the patient or friend or family member of a patient. So rather be smart early than be hurt and smart too late. Call me to discuss the few details. 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And this week, remember to visit the essential oil website, tinydropseo.com. Tinydropseo, the EO stands for essential oils, tinydropseo.com, for many health issues and solutions. So give it a try. It can't hurt. And it beats the expense and potential side effects from pain pills. Visit tinydropseo.com for more tips and tricks. And with that, we are so out of time. But be sure to come back next week for more timely healthcare and hospital safety tools. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.